Hello, I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 10th of March 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Sharon, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a look behind the scenes of a nuclear robotics works in Wolverhampton, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, information about glaucoma, and rounding all that off, another one of Graham Fisher's Tales from the Barn. But we start with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ian and Christine.
Health officials have pleaded with people not to throw away all the hard work against the virus, as it was revealed almost 800,000 people in the region have been vaccinated. People need to continue following coronavirus guidelines to bring the region's infection rates down further, health chiefs say. The latest plea came after it was revealed the West Midlands is one of the few areas where prevalence of the virus is still rising. And with schools about to reopen as rules are eased, chiefs have urged everyone to stay alert. It comes as another major vaccine hub opens its doors at Tipton Sports Academy, with the aim to vaccinate 1,500 people each day. New figures released yesterday by NHS England show the Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Groups have administered 378,388 first doses of the COVID vaccine. The ninth report of REACT1, one of the country's largest studies into COVID-19 infections, published by Imperial College London and Ipsos Mori, shows infections in England have fallen by two-thirds since the last report published in January. But while there has been another fall in the number of cases in England, the speed of the decline is slowing. When compared to the interim findings published in February, the prevalence has risen slightly in a number of areas, including the West Midlands. There was an apparent rise of 0.34% to 0.39% in the West Midlands. In Dudley, the authority's Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, Councillor Nicholas Barlow, urged everyone to continue following the rules of lockdown. Councillor Barlow said, "Dudley Borough's virus case numbers are continuing to fall, but we are continuing to monitor the situation carefully. COVID-19 rates remain too high and all residents, including those who have been vaccinated, must continue to follow the rules of the national lockdown. By staying at home, we can help to stop the spread of the virus, and I would urge everyone to stand strong and not throw away the incredible work we've done to drive virus figures down in our communities."
Councillor and his wife are due to stand trial later this year after allegedly committing fraud to claim £10,000 from a COVID-19 grant scheme. Wolverhampton councillor Harmon Banger, 39, of Bilston Road, and his wife Nina Kumari, 37, also of Bilston Road, will stand trial at Walsall Magistrates Court on October the 18th. They have both been charged over an alleged offence between March the 1st and May the 31st last year. Both pleaded not guilty to a single charge of committing fraud by dishonestly making a false representation to obtain £10,000 under the UK government COVID-19 small business scheme when they appeared at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court in January. A 5-day trial has now been listed for Walsall Magistrates Court between October the 18th and October the 22nd. Labour councillor Banger, who represents East Park on Wolverhampton Council, stood down from his role as the city's economy cabinet member after the allegations emerged in June last year. He was arrested by West Midlands Police in June on suspicion of fraud offences and was released pending a full probe. He has also been administratively suspended from the Labour group in the city pending the outcome of an internal party investigation.
Health Secretary Matt Hancock has praised people in Dudley for the successful rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. A third of residents in Dudley have now been vaccinated against the virus as the focus shifts to protecting the over 60s in the area. Now, Mr. Hancock has praised everyone involved in the rollout for doing an amazing job to ensure those eligible receive their jab. He said, "I want to thank everyone across Dudley who have worked so hard to get the vaccination rollout going so effectively. A massive thanks to all involved. It's going incredibly well. A third of people are now vaccinated already, and we're now inviting the over 60s to come forward and get vaccinated. I also want to pay tribute to the NHS locally, who are doing an amazing job, to the officers at the council who are working hand in glove, and to the local volunteers and local MPs in the area, Marco Longhi, James Morris and Mike Wood, for working incredibly hard to get the message out that it's good for you to get vaccinated, because we know that it protects you from ending up in hospital or dying of this dreadful disease. It helps you protect your community because it reduces the chance you will spread it to others, obviously, and it will help us all to get out of this and on the road back to freedom." The Health Secretary was full of praise for Dudley North MP Marco Longhi, who volunteers at the vaccination centre at the Black Country Living Museum with his wife. And the owners of the site, along with volunteers helping with the vaccination efforts, were also praised. The vaccination centre is now vaccinating more than 1,000 people per day. Mr. Hancock added, "I want to particularly give a shout out to Marco Longhi and his wife, who both volunteer at the vaccination centre at the Black Country Living Museum. Massive thanks to them, and massive thanks to everybody involved, and a big, big slice of gratitude to the Black Country Living Museum, who have given over their museum to do these jobs. It's a huge team effort, and I'm very, very grateful."
A hospital boss has spoken of his fear that the COVID pandemic may have prevented people with other serious illnesses from coming forward for treatment. David Loughton warned that people across the region with the early stages of cancer may not have been seen by a doctor due to the impact of coronavirus. And he said that while cancer and heart treatments had continued throughout the crisis, he was concerned that some seriously ill people may have slipped through the net. Mr. Loughton said, "We have started to restore services, particularly cancer. We carried on throughout all of this with heart surgery and cancer, but my concern is that there will be people who were ill that should have come forward but didn't go to their GPs and as a result were not seen. It is too early to be able to draw any conclusions, but we know that cancer stages go from 1 to 4, and the earlier you get treated, the better the outcome. It will probably be another year before we're able to say what the full impact will be."
Part of a busy road is set to be closed for up to 6 months while the famous Astell Bridge is repaired. Work is set to start on strengthening Primrose Bridge on Craigley Road, Netherton, so that it can carry lorries and buses. It is scheduled to start on March the 15th and will last for up to 6 months, with Craigley Road closed from the entrance to See Beeching Sons to the entrance of Billingham's for the duration of the work. For decades, the bridge has been known around the Black Country as Astle Bridge, after the words "Astle is King" were daubed on it to mark West Brom striker Jeff Astle's winning goal against Everton in the 1968 FA Cup final. The original graffiti was removed in the early 1990s, but the bridge has since been painted on again on numerous occasions. During the work, vehicles will be temporarily blocked from entering Northcote Road at its junction with Hales Owen Road and from entering Chapel Street at its junction with Cradley Road. Diversions will be in place via Cradley Road, Northcote Road, Hales Owen Road and Saltwells Road. Plans for the £2.2 million scheme were first unveiled in March 2020. The bridge, which passes over Dudley Canal, is currently designated as a weak bridge with a 7.5-ton weight limit. The repair work will increase the bridge load carrying capacity to 40 tonnes, so that it can carry safely heavy goods vehicles and buses. It is being funded with around £1.9 million from the Department of Transport and £300,000 from Dudley Council.
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. I hope you're all keeping well. This week, we thought we'd update you on what our fundraising team have been up to, as there's plenty of ways to get involved and support us, and there's even the chance to win yourself some fantastic prizes. Firstly, in the run-up to Mother's Day, we've been asking people to show how much they care and support a superhero with sight loss at the same time. It's really easy to get involved in our superhero campaign. One way, if you've got children, is to get them to sign up to our Beacon's Little Helpers. Their challenge is to complete four tasks to help mum at home over the Mother's Day weekend and get their family and friends to sponsor them and raise funds for Beacon. Their tasks could be anything from making the beds to helping with the hoovering. As we can't use paper sponsorship forms at the moment due to COVID-19, we're asking people to collect sponsorship money online via our Just Giving page. You can find it at www.justgiving.com/campaign/Beacons Little Helpers. Or you could create your own in aid of a Beacon Centre for the Blind. Missions should be completed over the Mother's Day weekend, which is the 13th and 14th of March. If you've got any questions, just drop us an email. It's supporters@beaconvision.org. Another way you can get involved is to tell the world how much your mum means to you. You certainly don't have to be Clark Kent to get a message out to the masses. Just head to our VisuFund page, where you can dedicate a message to your mum for everyone to read. You can upload a picture and share your link as well. Head to visufund.com/mothers-day-roses. We also know that Mother's Day is really hard for some. If that's you, we're sending you lots of love this coming weekend. We've also launched our Easter raffle, and we think we've got the best Easter raffle prize ever. It's an Easter egg that stands a metre high. It's one of three super sweet prizes up for grabs in this year's Easter raffle. Entries are £2 each, and they're available by visiting www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Easter Raffle. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Easter Raffle. The first prize is the beautifully decorated gigantic chocolate Easter egg, perfect for all you chocoholics. The second is a confectionery hamper kindly donated by the Black Country's favourite sweet shop, Teddy Gray's. The third prize is a delicious fruit and vegetable hamper to the value of £20 donated by our friends Taylor's Greengrocers. Although we're hopefully coming to the end of lockdown, COVID-19 is still having a devastating impact on our charity. We're currently losing £9,500 a week from our shops being closed. Each raffle entry not only increases your chance of winning, but also helps Beacon continue to support the sight loss community. Terms and conditions apply. You can find them on our Just Giving page, or you can also head to our Facebook page. Don't forget, you can find us by searching for Beacon Centre for more information. The raffle closes on Tuesday the 6th of April at midday. Lastly, don't forget this week we've got an array of virtual activities taking place. If you're not coming already, we'd love for you to join us. Our weekly book club meets on Mondays, and they're currently devouring The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman. Like all of our sessions, it's free to join and all are welcome. You don't need a copy of the book either, as it's read aloud during the session. Find out more by emailing Kim Williams at kwilliams@beaconvision.org or call 01902 880111 Mondays to Fridays. You can also head to our Facebook events pages. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll speak to you all again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks, Helen. We now head back to the local news. Reading for us, we have Ed, Christine, Angela, and at the top of the bill, it's Ian.
3,000 homes should be built on Shropshire Greenbelt to help Black Country councils, according to the leader of Dudley Council. The authority's leader, Patrick Harley, has written to Shropshire Council objecting to its decision to withdraw backing for controversial proposals for thousands of homes and a major business site on land near Tong and north of Junction 3 of the M54. Shropshire Council decided against including a garden village at Tong in its new local plan, which has just undergone its final stage of consultation, saying there was not enough justification to take the land out of the Greenbelt. The local plan sets out where 30,800 houses and 300 hectares of employment land will be developed across Shropshire by 2038. It includes 1,500 homes and 30 hectares of employment land for the Association of Black Country Authorities, which is not able to meet its housing need within its own boundaries under a legal duty to cooperate. But Dudley Metropolitan Borough Council has now objected to the latest draft of the plan, saying the proposed contribution towards addressing ABCA's shortfall is not enough. Shropshire Council's leader Peter Nutting said, "I am disappointed by this objection and don't think Shropshire should be expected to find space for the extra housing required by the urban area around Birmingham. Shropshire is already helping by allowing the use of some of our numbers to ease pressure in the Black Country, and I would resist any further changes. It will be for a government inspector to decide on the matter at a public inquiry next year."
Council tax bills in Wolverhampton will rise by almost 5% from April after the proposal was backed by chiefs in the city. A meeting of full council held to set the budget for 2021-22 saw members vote in favour of the proposed 4.99% increase, despite an amendment put forward by the Conservative opposition for a reduced 3.99% rise. Wolverhampton's overall budget for the coming year has been slashed by just over £15 million to £225 million to fund general services. Councillor Louise Miles, Deputy Leader of the Authority and Cabinet Member for Resources, said, "We've been able to set a balanced budget for the next financial year without the need to make significant cuts to services. However, this is only possible by raising council tax by 1.99% and imposing the government's adult social care levy, which is an additional 3%. Councillor Wendy Thompson, leader of the opposition Conservative group, who proposed the amendment for a 3.99% increase, said, "We realise that many families are experiencing difficult times and therefore want to be as helpful as possible. We realise that any rise is not good, but under the circumstances we wanted to at least give a gesture to the residents. A lot of residents have low-paid jobs and many people are unemployed and we wanted to recognise that." Council leader Councillor Ian Brookfield said the Conservatives were behaving like parish councillors and described the amendment as gesture politics, whilst Councillor Steve Evans said it was nothing short of a political stunt. Councillor Beverly Momenbardi added, "My advice to the seconder of this amendment would be to spend less time on Twitter, spend less time obsessing over the council's comms team, and get off your backside and support the residents in their time of need." The amendment was defeated by 42 votes to 10, with 43 members then voting in favour of the proposed 4.99% tax increase and 9 against.
The number of civil service jobs in the West Midlands has fallen by more than 6,000 over the past decade, new figures show. According to the Office of National Statistics, there are currently 28,880 civil servants working in the region, down by 6,260, or 18%, from the 35,140 in 2010. The figures show a reduction of around 900 posts in Walsall and Wolverhampton. Across England, the number of civil service jobs have been cut by 15% since 2010, with the headcount falling by 64,890 to a total of 363,470. However, despite this fall, the government has pledged to move more civil servant jobs, including senior roles, out of London as part of its levelling up agenda. The plans will see a Treasury campus set up in Darlington, a new national infrastructure bank in Leeds, and a second home for the Department of Transport in Birmingham. The Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government also wants staff to be working in Wolverhampton by the summer after it announced plans to open a second headquarters in the city with 500 posts stationed in the region by 2025. Wolverhampton South East MP Pat McFadden, the Shadow City Minister, said the recent announcement of relocation of 200 housing, communities and local government jobs was very welcome, but these figures show that we have lost over 6,000 civil service jobs over the past decade and around 900 in the Wolverhampton and Walsall area. If we combine that with the rise of 7,000 in overall unemployment in the city over the past year, it shows the size of the task we face in putting a strong economic recovery in place.
Council tax in Dudley will increase by just under 5% in April after councillors clashed over who should pay for the pandemic. The Conservative-run authority said the rise will protect services, while Labour accused the government of passing the cost of COVID onto local taxpayers. Councillor Steve Clark, Cabinet Member for Financial and Legal Services, said Dudley had received an extra £200 million government cash during the pandemic. Posing £5 million savings this year, he emphasised Dudley had also attracted hundreds of millions for regeneration projects in the past year. On council services, he said, over the next 3 years, we will be providing net additional investment rising to £8 million a year into adult social care, helping to manage rising costs and the complexity and rising numbers of people requiring care. Net additional investments rising to around £4 million per year into children's services. He added it was also providing an extra £1 million to tackle potholes and £250,000 to pay for more PSCOs in the borough. Saying auditors had recommended increasing the council's income, he said, we are proposing a council tax increase of 4.99%. Even with this increase, we still have the lowest council tax in the West Midlands and one of the lowest in the country. In response, Labour's councillor Peter Lowe said council tax rises hit low-income families hardest, spending a greater share of their income paying for services. Predicting the costs of adult services would outstrip council's ability to pay, he demanded the government give Dudley a fair deal, adding, the expectation that hard-working families will be hit with the largest council tax rise in years and at the very same time many will have jobs at risk and bills to pay is simply wrong. Make no mistake, this is a Conservative council tax hike in Downing Street implemented by their friends in Dudley. But Conservative councillors accuse their critics of having no alternative and ignoring nearby Labour councils which are increasing their council taxes.
A family has appealed for traffic calming measures to be introduced after a car crashed into their house. Arun Kohli and his family were sleeping in their home, Great Western Way, Kings Winford, when they were woken by a loud bang. The 25-year-old said he had gone to investigate what had happened and found a black Honda Civic parked on the corner of the house. No one was hurt during the incident on February the 28th, although Mr. Kohli said his parents and sister were a little shaken following the collision. There's been occasions when the lamp post has been hit outside our house, and a number of times when a car ended up on the grass right by the house as they go speeding up Stallings Lane, he said. Mr. Kohli said he wanted some corrective action to be taken by Dudley Council and developers Taylor Wimpey and some preventative measures to be put in. He said, "I'd like to see a rail put up on the greenery, maybe a crash barrier, as I have seen so many people speeding on this road. I don't know about speed bumps, unless they put them right up near the roundabout, but they could work, but my ideal scenario is some proper railings." A Taylor Wimpey spokesman said, "The safety and well-being of residents in its developments was very important to the firm. We are sorry to hear about the recent road traffic accident which affected one of the properties on our Himley View development." He added, "Any corrective action or traffic safety measures would require the relevant planning approval from Dudley Council." However, Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "We haven't been made aware of the incident, but we're happy to listen to any proposals the developer wishes to put forward."
We have two more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What is a cat's extra eyelid called? Question 2. What is Popeye's favourite canned food? Question 3. Which car maker also sells sausages? Question 4. What year was the first movie trailer shown? Question 5. Which island is named in honour of a woman? And question 6. Why do pirates wear earrings? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks, Mina. Coming up next, we have some more local news, brought to us by Ed, Angela, Ian, and at the top of the bill, it's Christine.
A city arts venue has commissioned a brand new way for people to enjoy outdoor performances. The New Hampton Arts Centre in Wolverhampton has invested in a new outdoor covered performance area called the New Horizons Stage. The outdoor space will be situated in the centre's central courtyard, housed between its historical buildings, and will enable promoters, companies and artists to perform safely in front of a live audience. The project was made possible thanks to more than £40,000 worth of funding from the Co-op Foundation, the Rowlands Trust, the Edward and Dorothy Cadbury Trust, the Postcode Neighbourhood Trust, and the James Beattie Charitable Trust. The New Horizons project consists of a big top style tent which, during COVID restrictions, will be operated with outside walls. It will allow for external ventilation and events to be presented as outside but under canvas. Under the current 2 metre social distancing and without any party mixing, the stage can seat an audience of 80 or 180 standing. But without social distancing, the stage can seat an audience of 180 and 320 standing. The centre has also been able to unveil its own roadmap for new developments, opening its New Horizons stage at the end of May. All dates are subject to running strictly under the national guidance at the time.
Work has this week started on the multi-million pound revamp of Hales Owen Leisure Centre. Contractors have moved in at the Poole Road site, and the work, which includes improvements to the gym and a new children's play area, is expected to take around 12 months. The centre will also get a new look entrance and cafe. Benches and lockers have been removed in early work to revamp the changing rooms. There will be major changes to the swimming pool to cater for learners and advanced swimmers, while the plans also include new village-style changing rooms and a poolside viewing area. It comes as work continues at pace on improvements at Crystal Leisure Centre in Stourbridge and on the new £18 million leisure centre in Dudley Town Centre. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said, "It is fantastic to hear that work has started on the improvements at Hales Owen Leisure Centre. Along with the ongoing works at Crystal and at the new site in Dudley, it reaffirms our commitment as a council to offer top-class leisure facilities for people in the borough to enjoy."
A mobile breast screening unit in the Black Country has parked up at a supermarket so women can shop and have a potentially life-saving appointment in one convenient visit. The Dudley, Wolverhampton and South Staffordshire Breast Screening Service, based at Russell's Hall Hospital, has three mobile screening units based at different community locations throughout the region. One of the units, named Hope by members of the public, has most recently touched base on Morrison's car park in Bilston. The pretty pink van is COVID secure with hand gel in all areas, temperature checks taken on arrival, and there are COVID health questions asked before the appointment can take place. The reception area is also secured with screens for the safety of both patients and staff. Jane Burness, Health Inequalities Leader for the programme, said it is really important that women continue to attend for this essential screening programme and they can be confident that it is safe to do so. Women aged between 50 and 70 who are registered with a GP within the area are invited to attend for screening every 3 years at a mobile unit or static site. The team are keen to reassure the public that despite COVID, their service is still up and running and it is not only safe to attend, but also incredibly important to do so. Carol Windmill, a service user, added, "It was down to one of these mobile screening units that I found out I had breast cancer. Going for a mammogram saved my life. If you get an appointment, please attend."
A St John's ambulance volunteer and councillor has called for a change in the law after a spate of thefts of life-saving defibrillators across the borough. Dudley councillor Adam Aston, who also works as a paramedic for West Midlands Ambulance Service, has set up an online petition calling on the government to categorise the theft of medical or life-saving equipment as aggravated offences which carry a heftier sentence in law. Two public access defibrillators belonging to St John's Ambulance have recently been stolen within Councillor Aston's Upper Gornal and Woodsetton ward. He said, "Without a doubt, the damage or theft of equipment such as defibrillators, bleeding kits or buoyancy aids put lives at risk and I think the law should recognise this. I would like to see these thefts treated as aggravated offences, which would carry a more severe sentence and act as a deterrent. A defibrillator is a device which delivers a high-energy electric shock to the heart of someone who has suffered a cardiac arrest and can be found in an increasing number of public locations across the UK. A Just Giving page to replace the two stolen defibrillators and increase the security has been set up and has already raised more than £700. You can visit the page at justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Upper Gornal Defib.
Sainsbury's flagship superstore in Wolverhampton city centre has been given the go-ahead to open a new barber's shop outside its premises. The 7-metre-wide King's Barbers Club pod will be built next to an existing seating area adjacent to the store's main entrance, just off the A4150 Ring Road near Chapel Ash. Sainsbury's, which made the application for the new facility, intends for it to operate as an additional convenience for use by shoppers visiting the store in Raglan Street. A statement from Chris Milner of Leeds-based WYG Environment Planning Transport Limited, agents acting on behalf of Sainsbury's, said the barber shop would run in conjunction with the store and was aimed at customers who were short on time. Minor alterations will be made to the existing outdoor seating, which will be moved slightly to allow space for the pod to be built. Permission has also been given for three signs, a revolving striped barber pole and two fret-cut King's Barbers Club signs. The location, scale and design of the pod ensure that there will be no adverse harm to the visual amenity or the character of the commercial area, said the statement. The pod is located in a well-established commercial area and will be viewed in the context of the store and car park. King's Barbers Club is the UK's largest independently owned chain of barbers shops.
Coming up next, we have Beacon Voices, which this week is brought to us by sight loss advisor Sharon, who talks to us about glaucoma.
Hello, this is Sharon, the sight loss advisor for Beacon. Today, I'm going to give you some information about glaucoma. What is glaucoma? Glaucoma is a condition of increased pressure within the eyeball, causing gradual loss of sight. What causes glaucoma? Dilating eye drops or medications that you might be taking. blocked or restricted drainage to your eye, medications such as cortisol steroids, poor or reduced flow to your optic nerve, high or elevated blood pressure. What are the first symptoms of glaucoma? Loss of peripheral or side vision. This is usually the first sign of glaucoma. Seeing halos around lights. If you see rainbow-coloured circles around lights or are unusually sensitive to light, it could be a sign of glaucoma. Can glaucoma be cured? The damage caused by glaucoma can't be reversed, but treatment and regular checkups can help slow or prevent vision loss, especially if you catch the disease in its early stages. Glaucoma is treated by lowering your intraocular pressures. What are the types of glaucoma? There are four types of glaucoma: open angle, angle closure, secondary, and childhood. Open angle glaucoma is not divided into lower and higher pressure types. Acute angle closure attack is an emergency. Glaucoma can happen due to another eye condition, a secondary eye condition. What does vision look like with glaucoma? Teaching people that glaucoma causes loss of peripheral vision may teach them to ignore the early signs of glaucoma. We found that most common symptoms reported by patients with early or moderate glaucoma were needing more light, blurred vision, and seeing glare. How is glaucoma treated? Treatment for glaucoma can depend on your symptoms. These can include eye drops, laser treatment, and surgery. Eye drops reduce the pressure in your eye 1 to 4 times per day. Laser treatment to open up the blocked drainage tubes inside the eye or to reduce the production of fluid in your eye. Surgeries to improve the drainage or fluid flow around the eye. You will have to attend regular eye appointments to check the pressure in both eyes. There is an organisation called Glaucoma UK. Their contact details are 01233 648170. They are open Monday, Tuesday 9:30 till 5 and Wednesday 9:30 till 2. Or you can email their helpline at helpline@glaucoma.uk. If you would like more information about glaucoma, contact the Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111.
Thank you for that, Sharon. Up now we have our final block of local news, starting with Angela.
A record store has made the best of lockdown by turning its sales online, selling as far afield as the US and Mexico. Ian Davies, who runs Stay Loose Records, based in Wolverhampton city centre, was forced to close his doors once again when the third national lockdown was announced in January. But he has now moved his business to online, selling records through eBay and specialist site Discogs. Since then, he has sold records across the world. Ian, 43, said, "I've been selling on the two sites and we have been selling all over the world. It's not just in Wolverhampton. I have sold some in the US, Mexico and all over Europe. It's been keeping us going during lockdown. We're not taking in as much as we would when it's a physical sales, but it will be better when the shops reopen. Roll on April the 12th. We will try to keep the online sales running when the shop reopens too." He added, "It's been successful for us. The more we sell, the more we get noticed. I now have a 100% feedback score on eBay. I try to post out the same or at the latest the next day after someone buys a record. A lot of people check the reviews, so having 100% is doing really well."
A new art project aims to bring a community together to honour a historic area of canal in the Black Country. Alarum Productions is running an audio trail project called Walking Through Waterways History to help bring to life the Dudley No. 2 Canal between Windmill End Junction and Horn Basin, which is based near Netherton. The project, which is commissioned by Creative Black Country as part of Arts Council England's Creative People and Places scheme, is looking for people to walk the canal section and give their views on the area through audio recordings. Project lead Heather Wasty said, "We want to produce a piece which can be listened to anywhere around the world and which helps point out some of the interesting historical points of the canal in an entertaining way. To find out more and to submit a memory about the canal, email yourmemories@alarumproductions.org.uk.
One of the region's most important life-saving charities has marked a major day in its history, starting work on a dedicated new base. Officials from the Midlands Air Ambulance Charity were present to see the first spade go in the ground ahead of construction work on its headquarters at Cosford. The charity says the new facility, which has been in planning for more than 4 years, will provide a host of benefits for patients, staff and fundraisers. The base, off Neachley Lane, will include a purpose-built environment for clinical staff, an advanced clinical simulation training room and space for 2 aircraft, allowing the expansion of its service in the future. The project is expected to be completed in late 2022. Hannah Seabright, the Chief Executive of Midlands Air Ambulance, said the day had marked a major milestone for the charity. She said, "The development of a purpose-built airbase and charity headquarters has been strategically planned for several years to improve the long-term resilience of the charity and to provide enhanced pre-hospital care to people across the Midlands region. Therefore, the turf-cutting ceremony was a significant milestone in bringing our vision to fruition. This new facility will ensure the critical care team are equipped to treat the increasingly complex patient cases and enhance our daily life-saving service, featuring a purpose-built clinical training facility and a more suitable environment for our air crew when they return from complex, stressful and challenging air ambulance missions."
An otter has been spotted swimming in a Wolverhampton canal for the first time in more than 60 years. The semi-aquatic animal was caught on camera by eagle-eyed walker Surinder Joshua Duroc swimming along the Whirley and Essington Canal at Bentley Bridge, Wensfield. Largely absent from industrial waterways for more than half a century, the otter was seen catching a fish along the stretch of canal at the rear of the Nickelodeon pub near New Cross Hospital. A designated local nature reserve since 2008, the canal is already home to swans, Canada geese, kingfishers and a variety of other wildlife. Evidence of badgers using the towpath has also been reported recently. Paul Wilkinson, senior ecologist at the Canal and River Trust, said, "It's wonderful to hear that one of our most enigmatic mammals has been spotted swimming along the Whirley and Essington Canal, so close to the city of Wolverhampton. The fact that we're even talking about otters on formerly industrial canals is incredible and a real testament to all the hard work that so many people have put into improving the water quality in the region. We know we have about 10 otters with territories along our canals, and it's amazing that they're now being seen in areas where they have been absent for over 60 years. The canals have been transformed in recent years, and this could be the first time otters have been seen on some of our waterways since the Industrial Revolution," he added. Councillor Phil Bateman, who campaigned for the Whirley and Essington Canal to be made a local nature reserve in 2007, described the sighting as stunning news for the city and the local area in particular. "This is hugely exciting. Back then, I knew this overgrown and little used canal was an asset to our community. Here we are in 2021 and the canal is now a much loved and explored nature reserve. This very first sighting of an otter 2 miles outside the city centre is fantastic. Absolutely stunning news."
Children across the Black Country are being invited to provide the best side of their teachers in a competition. School stationery firm Mapped Helix, based in Kings Winford, is running the Thank You Teacher Art Competition as a way to thank teachers for their hard work during the coronavirus pandemic. The firm is looking for children to create drawings of their teachers, with 5 winning entries being chosen to win an Oxford Metallics Premium Writing Gift Set. The prize will also include a range of stationery suitable for the child's class, such as colouring pens for younger winners and a math set for the older pupils, plus Mapped picnic water bottles. The Thank You Teacher portraits can be created from pencil, felt tips, crayons, chalk, glitter, paint or anything else the children would like to use. Parents of children entering the competition should post these portraits on Facebook at Mapped Helix or Instagram at Mapped_Helix with the hashtag Thank You Teacher to be in with a chance of winning one of the 5 prizes for their teachers and class. The deadline for entries is Monday, the 21st of March.
Now we head to Roger, who has for us another edition of his Did You Know feature.
Hi everyone, it's Roger here again with another set of amazing facts to astound and fascinate you again. So I hope you're alert and ready to answer the questions to our quiz this week, the answers to which of course you'll find in here. Now, here's a perfect little fact. Cats actually have one more eyelid than humans do. This extra eyelid is known as the haw, and it's spelled H-A-W. And for the most part, it acts like a windscreen wiper, and when a cat blinks, the haw swipes horizontally, removing any dust or debris. You generally won't get a chance to see the cat's haw, but if you do, it could indicate that an underlying health issue occurs. Now, nearly all animals have a haw, with humans and most other primates being the exception. One for the lovers of Popeye. Spinach is a good source of iron and other vitamins and minerals too, but it was reported that sales in the vegetable soared in the USA when the Popeye cartoon first appeared. There is a brand of canned spinach in the USA bearing Popeye's cartoon on each label, and although Popeye always says that I'm strong to the finish because I eat my spinach, eating it doesn't actually build muscle, but it's no doubt that it's a very good food. And most people know that Volkswagen is iconic for their camper vans and the Combi and even the Beetle. A lesser known product that comes out of Volkswagen's factories is sausages, specifically currywurst. Now why in the world would Volkswagen make sausages? Well, one of their factories was built in quite a remote location, so they decided to make their own food for the factory workers. Their sausages were apparently quite popular, as they ended up being sold commercially. In fact, Volkswagen sausages are so popular that they bring in more revenue than their cars. And if, like me, you've ever wondered why movie trailers were so called, well, here's why. They were originally shown after the movie, which is why they were called trailers. The world's first movie trailer was shown at a theatre in Harlem in New York in 1914. The trailer, which promoted an upcoming movie featuring Charlie Chaplin, was shown after the movies, which were shown at the theatre. The problem with the trailers showing after the film was that the audience wouldn't stay around long enough to watch them, making the trailers rather ineffective. But now, of course, they're shown first, so we got no choice but to watch them. St. Lucia is the only country in the world named after a woman. The island has actually been continuously inhabited since at least 200 AD, but wasn't discovered by Europeans until the 16th century. Legend has it that on December the 13th, 1502, French sailors were shipwrecked and became stranded on the island, and, as that is St. Lucia's Day, they named the island in honour of her. And lastly this week, pirates wore earrings because they believed it improved their eyesight. In fact, there are many reasons why pirates wore earrings. Some sailors would adorn their ears with trinkets from faraway islands to show how well travelled they were. Pirates were known to believe that precious metals in their earrings had magical properties and could protect them from and even cure bad eyesight. Also, pirates were known to believe that earrings could aid in seasickness as well as preventing them from drowning. Well, there's me always thinking that a pirate wore one earring because he couldn't afford 2. Shows how thick I am. Anyway, that's it for this week, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Rod saying bye for now. Ta-da!
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead will start off wet, but will become drier as the week progresses. Temperatures across the week will be typical for the time of year. Low UV levels are expected all week. The sunrise and sunset times are 6:24 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:12 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 12th of March, we have light rain and a fresh breeze with a maximum temperature of 9 degrees. On Saturday 13th of March, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. And on Sunday 14th of March, all the way through to Thursday 18th of March, we have light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks, that Mina. Now we head to some more sounds of nature, which this week is brought to us by Ed.
The song thrush is a small, familiar songbird commonly found in parks, gardens, woodland and scrub. Living up to its common name, it has a beautiful loud song with repeating phrases. Widespread throughout Europe and as far east as Siberia, northern populations are migratory, heading to Africa, whereas our song thrushes tend to be residents. From March until April, song thrushes breed, often producing three broods of up to five blue, spotty eggs.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we have Ian with the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Last Thursday, Albion were denied a dramatic equaliser that their overall performance deserved when Mbaye Diagne saw a stoppage time goal against Everton ruled out because his toe was offside. Following a three-game unbeaten run, the Baggies hosted Carlo Ancelotti's side at the Hawthorns and were the better team for long spells. Diagne saw a smart header well saved by Jordan Pickford in the opening few minutes. The striker also went close with another header following a long throw after the break. Albion threatened once more when Conor Gallagher, on the angle just 6 yards out, flashed a powerful strike wide. But it was Everton who broke the deadlock in the 65th minute when Richarlison nodded in a cross from Gylfi Sigurdsson. Albion pressed for an equaliser from that point and they thought they had one in stoppage time when Diagne brought down a cross from Ainsley Maitland-Niles before firing home. The linesman immediately raised his flag, but the subsequent VAR check showed the striker was offside by just a toe. Albion's faint hopes of staying in the Premier League were dealt a blow after they failed to beat Newcastle at the Hawthorns. A match boss Sam Allardyce described as must win, the Baggies entered the game knowing they would be just 6 points away from safety if they could beat Steve Bruce's side. For 16th placed Newcastle, though, a draw was always going to be a decent result, with it ensuring Albion remained 9 points behind them. And in the end, that's what the Magpies got, with the two teams playing out an uneventful goalless draw. Albion were the better team for long spells, with Mbaye Diagne having a couple of decent opportunities, while Matt Phillips should have scored, but instead fired over from 8 yards. Newcastle created a couple of half chances, but Allardyce's men were largely untroubled as they registered their third clean sheet in four games. Overall, though, neither team really did enough to win it, with Albion's goal difference meaning they are effectively 9 points from safety with just 10 games remaining. The Baggies next face Crystal Palace away at Selhurst Park on Saturday. Both teams hit the woodwork, and Romain Saïss produced one of the misses of the season as the Midlands derby between Villa and Wolves ended goalless. Ollie Watkins and Ezri Konsa sent efforts against the bar inside the opening 15 minutes as the hosts started strongly at Villa Park. But Wolves responded in the second half, Connor Cody hitting the post with Saïss somehow putting the rebound over from a yard out. Cody was also denied by Villa goalkeeper Emiliano Martinez as the visitors could find no way through. The hosts almost snatched a stoppage time winner, with Wolves thankful to goalkeeper Rui Patricio, who denied Watkins before Konsa put the rebound wide. That was perhaps a fitting end to a match where both teams were left to rue poor finishing and both goalkeepers had only one serious save to make each. But then only Saïss will know how he failed to convert his big chance after Cody had struck the post. A game of two halves, with Villa on top in the first and Wolves the second. The result ultimately did little for either team. Villa, who were again without Jack Grealish, are at risk of losing further ground in the race for European qualification, while Wolves face a battle to make the top 10, and next play Liverpool at home on Monday.
Up next, it's Liz, who gives us a look behind the scenes of a nuclear robotics works in Wolverhampton.
Behind the scenes at the hidden nuclear robotic works. Vast, futuristic-looking building, check. Lots of men in smart overalls stood at computerised control desks, check. Masses of shiny high-tech equipment performing mind-bending feats of precision, check. But this isn't some underground lair on a remote Caribbean island. It's on an industrial park on the fringes of the Black Country. And this anonymous-looking site is home to one of the biggest players in Britain's nuclear industry. Thousands of people will drive past Ansaldo Nuclear in Ettingshaw, Wolverhampton, without giving a second thought to what goes on behind its gates. But inside the huge yellow building, equipment that would once have been the preserve of sci-fi programmes is made with laser-like precision. The company produces equipment used in both the nuclear power and defence industries, and a high percentage of components are manufactured in-house. Raw metals come into one end of the building, hand-built precision equipment comes out of the other. Managing Director Andrea Basso speaks with a real excitement as he talks about the products coming out of the factory. He talks animatedly about the moving caves, train-like machines which run on rails above waste silos at plants such as Sellafield in Cumbria, remotely handling radioactive material and safely sealing it under concrete in nuclear-proof containers. At a nuclear plant, there is all sorts of waste that has to be disposed of safely, says Mr. Basso. That can be old overalls, Wellington boots, bits of wood, through to fuel rod casings and wrappers. They are all dumped in a silo, with just one of those can contain up to 39,000 cubic feet of waste. The mobile caves can safely recover that nuclear waste from the silos. Cell leader Pete Andrews demonstrates a robotic arm which replicates the movement of the human hand to deal with radioactive material inside a nuclear-proof container. But while much of the technology is avant-garde, it is good old-fashioned precision which is the real watchword when dealing with nuclear waste. One project they are currently working on is a door which will be used at the European Spallation Source, a world-leading research centre in Sweden, and at this moment in time it is waiting inspection. But this inspection won't just be a cursory glance. Electronic equipment has to be used to ensure there are no flaws in the surface. When you are handling nuclear materials, everything has to be machined, fabricated or assembled to defined quality levels and validated. Without the paperwork, the manufactured components are useless. Everyone is always told how the Challenger space shuttle disaster was the result of a faulty O-ring, says Mr. Andrews. There is no room for any error. The company recently announced a £12 million deal to develop robot technologies which will be used for the decommissioning of older nuclear power stations, including the Fukushima plant in Japan, which hit the headlines around the world 10 years ago when it was affected by an earthquake, and Sellafield in Cumbria. But it is not just nuclear plants coming to the end of their life which make use of the company's equipment. Ansaldo is also working with French energy giant EDF on the new nuclear power plants at Hinkley Point in Somerset. With the new power stations, we don't wait until it is time to decommission in 50 years' time. We are thinking about that from the very beginning, from the moment they are designed and built, says Mr. Basso. Looking even further ahead, the company has two teams of engineers in France working on what could be the first nuclear fusion plant in the world. The International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor, ITER, in Provence, is a multinational research project which originated in 1985 as an initiative of post-Cold War cooperation between then US President Ronald Reagan and his Soviet counterpart, Mikhail Gorbachev. A total of 35 countries are involved in the scheme, and work on the complex began in 2013. If successful, it could prove to be a game changer in the way the world sources its electricity. Mr. Basso says, at the moment, nuclear power comes from nuclear fission, which is about breaking the atom into two. But nuclear fusion is about fusing two atoms together. If they can do that, it will produce a long-term source of sustainable energy. To many, the company is better known as John Thompson's. Founded in 1834 as a boilermaker, the company grew into one of the largest employers in the West Midlands, known the world over for its fuel tankers. It played a crucial role in the Second World War, helping to build the harbour bridges and landing craft used in the D-Day landings. In 1946, it expanded into providing equipment for the emerging atomic energy industry. In 1970, it was taken over by Clark Chapman, which later became the NEI Group, and the Wolverhampton plant became known as the NEI Thompson. The company was acquired by Rolls-Royce in 1989 and was eventually bought by the Italian Ansaldo Nuclear in 2014. At the moment, the company employs about 450 engineers in the UK, with the Wolverhampton plant serving as its head office. Mr. Basso says one of the biggest challenges the company faces at the moment is securing skilled workers. We are desperately trying to recruit skilled welders, fitters, engineers, and quality control personnel, he says. We are looking for people who are passionate about engineering or manufacturing, who are motivated with a good work ethic, irrespective of where they are in their career. If nuclear fusion really does become a reality, the opportunities are huge. Giovanni Vellini of the International Atomic Energy Agency says it could be the answer to mankind's future energy needs. Fuel is inexpensive and abundant in nature, while the amount of long-lived radioactive waste and greenhouse gases produced through fusion are minimal.
Thanks for that, Liz. It's now time to find out how many questions you got right in our flashback quiz. So, Mina, do you have the answers all lined up for us?
I do. So here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What is a cat's extra eyelid called? The answer? The haw. Question 2. What is Popeye's favourite canned food? And of course, it's spinach. Question 3. Which car maker also sells sausages? And the answer here is Volkswagen. Question 4. What year was the first movie trailer shown? And the answer here is 1914. Question 5. Which island is named in honour of a woman? And the answer is St. Lucia. Question 6. Why do pirates wear earrings? And the answer here is they believed it improved their eyesight and prevented seasickness. How did you do? Great, I hoped. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. With the nearest point to our only navigable canal, the Monmouthshire and Brecon, universally abbreviated to Mon and Brec, being some 20 miles away, the Welsh border seems far removed from our familiarity with the spider's web of black country waterways, where it seemed possible to throw a brick in any direction and it would most likely splash into the cut. Yet even here, the sparse strands of a canal-based anecdote may be given cohesion by the most innocuous happenstance, and I offer an intriguing example of one such that was woven together recently in front of my very eyes by nothing more than a chance find in the cellar of the Ridspence Inn directly across the road from the barn. For anyone even vaguely familiar with the oft-turbulent history of our inland waterways, the arrival of the Canal and River Trust, the CRT, came like a breath of fresh air. From the stark days of nationalisation and the British Transport Commission of 1948, with its mandate to dismantle waterways that were deemed of little further use, to the less obstructive days of the British Waterways Board, the more enlightened British Waterways that it begat, and on to the charitable third sector CRT of 2012, the journey from wholesale infilling to active preservation and promotion has been quite remarkable. Yet the notion for the CRT was not a new one. Robert Aikman, 1914 to 1981, one of the founding fathers of the Inland Waterways Association, the IWA, in 1946, was convinced that the only way to save our waterways was to develop them for multi-use purposes including commerce, pleasure, water supply, drainage, fishing, the preservation of the archaeology, and a diversified use of formerly private towpaths. He supported the formation of a National Waterways Conservancy, presently advocating broadly similar principles as embodied in the new CRT. Whilst the CRT is the official custodian of the waterways, the IWA has become the largest coordinated body of waterways volunteers in the country, and together with its Waterway Recovery Group, whose members are affectionately known as Wergies, has done much to restore many derelict navigations that suffered grievously under the British Transport Commission and the provisions of the Caustic LMSR Act of 1944. IWA's achievements have been significant, but the one I'll enlarge upon here is its support for the Battle of Stourbridge Cut in 1962, effectively a Custer's last stand for the old order. The tale of how the will of the people prevailed in retaining their canal has passed into legend. But significantly, the legacy of officials and volunteers working alongside each other established a model that is still in use to this day and is the cornerstone for almost every restoration that has occurred since. The CRT comprises a series of local partnerships on which delegates sit for a 3-year period, renewable for a further 3 and with only 2 terms allowed. So, the announcement that a colleague of mine, whom I have sat alongside these past 2 full terms, has been appointed National Chairman of the IWA, was a cause for much congratulation when we met recently at a partnership meeting. It was but a short while after returning from this gathering that I adjourned to the inn opposite for a refreshing libation. I had barely sat down when mine host handed me a press cutting. "I was having a clear out and found this in the cellar," he announced. "I thought it might interest you." The extract was A Countryman's Journal by one H.J. Massingham and related the author's visit to the hostelry in which he waxes lyrical. His description of this noble pile remaining what it has called itself from the 14th century, and still offering an accommodation to travellers as well as a bar parlour for the locals, might have been written for TripAdvisor last week. It was only the slightly florid prose and the dated nuance of the words pasted onto a fragile frame some 15 inches by 5 inches and all tanned with a hue derived from a combination of ageing and generations of cigarette smoke that identified it as being of its time. That time being 1939, when the author was a travel writer. I subsequently learnt that he injured his leg and, after a lengthy recuperation, injured it again to the extent it had to be amputated. After which he still managed to write another 30 books before dying in 1952, aged 64. I convinced myself only half-heartedly that I had never heard of Massingham. I looked him up, explained mine host, as if anticipating my thoughts. Apparently he wrote the foreword for a famous canal book. Now mine host is not particularly a waterways enthusiast, but he's a darned fine mine host, a quintessential element of which involves engaging with his locals. And with that one comment did he indeed engage me as the mental cogs began to creak. Nipping back across the road and having scanned the bookshelves, my good lady returned with my copy of Narrowboat by L.T.C. Rolt, an absorbing record of how he and his wife adapted an old narrowboat as a home and journeyed over 400 miles along the waterways in a celebration of what was, by the time of its publication in 1944, the near-lost culture of boatmen and the fast-disappearing rural landscape of oldie England. It's one of those niche tomes that may pass most folks by unheralded, but, like De Salis, Yarranton, Telford, Brindley et al., is high up there on the required reading for any enthusiast who aspires to the echelons of serious waterways aficionado. I flicked to the foreword and read the opening line. I received the manuscript of this book before I knew the author personally. There follows his effulgent praise of Rolt's travels along a dying network, an unvarnished appraisal described by Sir Compton Mackenzie as an elegy of classic restraint unmarred by sentiment, that concludes with Massingham's near-tearful final sentence. He is pleading for something that is part of the soul of England. An engineer by discipline, Lionel Thomas Caswall Rolt, 1910-1974, was a prolific writer and the biographer of giants in the civil engineering fields, including Brunel and Telford. He was an enthusiast for vintage cars and heritage railways, being instrumental in the formation of the Tylluthlin Railway Preservation Society in Mid Wales, and his contribution across the spectrum of his interests was considerable. But it is as a pioneer of the leisure cruising industry, and in particular his epic journey around the Midlands canals, that he is best remembered in the waterway sphere and in which his influence is acknowledged to this day. Rolt's seminal narrowboat led to his meeting with the aforementioned Aikman at the top of Tardy Big Locks on the Worcester and Birmingham Canal near Alvechurch, a plaque denotes the spot, that led directly to the formation of the IWA, the august body that my colleague now leads. The rest is history, a history that is underpinned by, amongst other things, the Battle of Stourbridge Cut and the nascence of a burgeoning restoration movement, which ultimately led to the formation of Aikman's Conservancy, the Canal and River Trust. Powerful stuff. There's the layers of a gripping fireside yarn, if ever. So here's the cream poured on top. For a while, from 1914 onwards, Tom Rolt was my near neighbour, living in the village of Cusup, less than 4 miles away from the barn. His book, that was instrumental in saving the waterways of both my birthplace and my current home, contains a foreword written by a man whom Rolt had up to that point never met, yet who once frequented my local pub, where the cosy, snug and open hearth has barely changed since Massingham's last visit 3/4 of a century ago. Who knows, I might even be sitting in his seat. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!